This is the Legal Lowdown, brought to you by Bell and Buxton.
Hello, welcome to our podcast. This is Alex Ross of Bell and Buxton. I'm a corporate lawyer. We are based in Sheffield and we primarily deal with the SME market. And that's why we thought that today's podcast would be of interest to people who are falling out with people who they are in business with. So I primarily deal with company law on a non-contentious side, but these things go very much hand in glove with the litigation side of things. And so to that extent, I've asked my colleague Dax Keeling to join us. Hello, Dax.
Hello, Alex. Yes, I'm a litigation solicitor. I deal with all manner of different things, but for the purposes of today, one of the things I deal with is commercial disputes, and that includes shareholder disputes and intercompany disputes. From my perspective, in the last year or so, my impression is that I've been receiving more inquiries than normal about shareholder disputes and inter-business disputes. The impact of the pandemic has clearly been huge for all of us on a personal level, but it's also, I think, added a great deal of strain for many businesses and created many challenges for a number of reasons. It wouldn't be a surprise if that in itself has meant that there has been an increase in this type of dispute, as people in business feel the strain of working under very strange conditions. That being the case, it seems like a good time to do a podcast on shareholder disputes and what they mean for shareholders. So, Alex, just as a really basic starting point, what are shareholders and what are their role in a company?
So the shareholders are the owners of a business, and they are the ones whose money is at stake if there's anything goes wrong. That's compared to the directors, who are the people who actually run the business. In most of the clients that we deal with, they're often the same people, and that can lead to a confusion as to the different roles that they have. And sometimes it's important to spell out what the differences are so that people understand how they go about resolving problems that might otherwise have sprung up between them and their business partners. So, Dax, how do these disputes happen in practice?
Well, I think, as you say, Alex, most of the companies we deal with are going to be small private companies. And so quite often you're going to find that the shareholders are also the directors. And so there is often a bit of a crossover between their interests and their and how they fall out as well. There's a huge range of ways in which people can hit difficulty. Probably at different levels of seriousness as well. So just to give some examples, there might be a difference of opinion between people within the company on the company's future direction, or whether it should enter into particular contracts, or maybe even a personnel issue with staff. It might just be that the shareholder wants out of the business and wants to stop being a shareholder in the business, which of itself can be problematic if it causes a degree of resentment. And probably particularly relevant at the current time, given what we've all been through in the pandemic, resentments can build up over time, not for one particular issue, but just between directors, shareholders, because of a number of things. Maybe one person thinks the other isn't pulling their weight within the business. Maybe one person thinks that they're being sidelined or being kept out of the decision making. That can be something that builds up and becomes a longer term problem. There are, of course, other issues which can be much more serious. Maybe somebody's got their hands in the till somewhat. Maybe somebody's paying themselves money and maybe to their family and not to your client, and there's no justification for it. Sometimes people can get sacked because of a deteriorating relationship. I had a case 3 or 4 years ago where my client was the managing director of a company. He was also given a small shareholding. His relationship with the real owner of the company deteriorated to the point where he was just dismissed with no notice whatsoever. And as it turned out, he was unfairly dismissed. But that left him as a shareholder in a company that he was no longer working in, with a minority shareholding and with an owner who was doing his level best to try and make sure that my client got absolutely nothing that he was entitled to. So these are the kind of things that can arise. So, Alex, what can a shareholder do in that situation? What tools might he or she have available to them that might potentially get themselves out of the mess that they find themselves in?
We'll typically look and see if there is a shareholders agreement. That's a contract between shareholders where it can give one or other of the shareholders certain rights in certain situations. And that might be an interesting card to play in a situation like that. Also, the constitution of a company is its articles of association, which you'll find registered at Companies House. So occasionally there are still articles out there where there's a casting vote given to the chair if there's an equality of votes, and that might be something you could play on. But I think you also need to look at, you know, the value of a private company can vary. Essentially, unless you've got a controlling interest, it's only worth what someone's prepared to pay for it. And if you've got no right to a dividend and you've got no right to appoint directors, then any purchaser of those shares will be coming into a situation where, like as not, in the situation you were describing, Dax, the majority controlling shareholder doesn't like them, doesn't want them to be there, and is going to be opposed to their remove. And they're never going to declare any dividends, so the person coming in is not going to get a return on their investment. So in those circumstances, the shares are worth nothing. And you can't lose sight of that when you're talking to clients in these situations, because they sometimes come in saying, right, I've got a 40% shareholding, so therefore I'm entitled to 40% of the net assets of the company. And it doesn't work like that to start off with. First of all, you may find that you're being frozen out by the majority shareholder, in which case, like I was saying before, your shareholding is effectively worthless to anyone apart from the other shareholder. So if that shareholder doesn't want to pay fair price for it, then that's a situation that can be quite common and very difficult to overcome. But that's where I think you come to people like Dax for specialist advice about how you can maximise your value of your shares and get what's called a fair value for them. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that, Dax?
Yeah, I think in a wider sense, you hit on a really good point, which is that for all the theory, and I'll go into potential claims open to shareholder in a minute. In practice, if you're talking about the typical small private limited company, the value of your shareholding is not necessarily going to be that high. And so before you commit to anything, you need to think very carefully about whether you really want to go down that road. Because by their very nature, these kind of cases can be pretty nasty. If you're basically taking a fellow director or shareholder to court because you're alleging that they've done wrong to you, relations are going to be pretty tough. And these aren't easy cases either. They're often lengthy, expensive, and you do have to think extremely carefully about whether the cost of that is worthwhile. Now, in terms of valuing shares, that probably leads into the most obvious option that is open to a minority shareholder, i.e. somebody who's got less than 50% shareholding in the company and so can't control what the company's doing. And the main option open to a shareholder is what's called an unfair prejudice petition. Now, that is a legal action that's based on the principle that acts by the company, i.e. through its directors, are unfairly prejudicial to the interests of the shareholder. Now, that will cover a wide range of possible behaviours. Now, I gave some examples before. So if the director has got his hands in the till, or is paying themselves money that isn't authorised or that is excessive, or if they've refused to pay dividends out when they should be paid to shareholders, or there's no reason not to do so. That can also go into more serious issues such as financial mismanagement or even fraud, keeping your clients out of the management of the company, undermining them, marginalising them. As you might recall, Alex, we had a case not too long ago where our client had been thumped by his fellow director and shareholder. Now, that case didn't end up going to court, but that would have been something that might have been used to try and support an unfair prejudice claim, because that's something that's fairly excessive.
Yes, and in that one, it was important that we were able to manage the expectations of the client, who thought that a certain amount of shareholding meant that he would recover a certain amount of money. But unfortunately, in that situation, because the person who thumped him was the majority shareholder, then really he did have more power than was initially credited to him. So you just have to be realistic about what kind of money he was going to get. But at the same time, the other thing that can come to a minority shareholder's aid is that there's nothing that can force him or her to sell their shares. So what happens is that the majority shareholder might think that they've carried the day and they can just freeze out the minority person. But if they ever want to cash in on that business and sell to a third party, for example, then they're going to have to give that person's percentage of shareholding in terms of value to that person. So it makes sense to cut a commercial deal when the relationship's broken down, so that it might mean that one party receives some money out of the equation, but at least it clears the decks and allows the majority shareholder to continue running the business just for themselves and to receive all the sale proceeds at some point in the future. So that's the angle you try and manoeuvre when you're acting for a minority shareholder. If you're acting for a majority shareholder, then it's all about driving the price down and trying to explain to the opposition that their shares really aren't worth a lot of money and that they ought to take substantially less than face value, just so that they can get out with some money at all, failing which they're going to have to wait for a trade sale, which could take years and might never happen. Shares might get passed on to the next tier of family, and at which point, you know, that doesn't do the minority shareholder any good because they're never going to see any return on their money. So it can be a difficult thing to make people see that from the start, and I think that's where we come in, really.
Yeah, I think that's right. There is a degree of benefit to a minority shareholder just staying in there and being an irritant, but that isn't necessarily a particularly nice place to be, because it just means that the conflict continues. With an unfair prejudice petition, if you're successful, you might be wanting a court order that makes the directors of the company take certain action or stop doing a certain thing. But in the main, I think that most people going through with it would probably want their shares to be purchased and so they could be bought out of the company. The courts have quite a wide range of options open to them in that case. If your shares are going to be bought out, then they'd have to be valued independently. But as you've said, Alex, really, you've got to be very careful and realistic about what your shares might be worth, because for a lot of those private limited companies out there, a third party isn't necessarily going to be jumping up and down to buy into a small private limited company. That's just the way of the world. There are two other potential options open to a shareholder, but they're pretty heavy duty, really. And so you don't really tend to see them that often. The unfair prejudice petition is by far the most common approach to take. The first one is called a derivatives claim. And these are pretty complex, but for the purposes of the podcast, what I'll say is that where you have a claim against the director of a company, and there is a crossover here with unfair prejudice as well, because the director's breached duties that he or she owes to the company, the right of action actually falls with the company itself. But of course, if you're a minority shareholder who's being undermined somewhat, it's unlikely that the company is going to want to take action against its own director. So in that case, the shareholder can step into the shoes of the company and bring the claim against the director because of actions that are harming the company, basically. And so by definition, the shareholders too. So that might cover negligent decision making by a director, or possibly a failure to do something that's caused significant loss, or possibly even making secret profits at the expense of the company. I'd say it's probably at the higher end of the level of wrongdoing. So it is quite high level stuff. The possible remedies might be an order that the director has to pay money back to the company for the loss that's been caused by their actions. But of course, that's going back to the company rather than the shareholders, although it might feed back to the shareholders by way of a dividend at a later stage. It might also include an injunction to stop particular actions or behaviour continuing. These are rarely come across, I would say, because for most small private companies, it's going to be a really detailed legal process. And if you're asking a court to allow you to step into the shoes of a company, you're going to have to work hard to prove why that should be allowed to happen. And at the end of the day, you're not getting a direct result for yourself as a shareholder anyway. So it's unusual to go down that route. I suppose it might be more likely in a bigger company, probably not in the types of company that we would tend to come across.
You mentioned secret profits, and that is where a director has abused his position and set up another business, for example, and diverted money that should have come into this company and therefore that he would have to share. And it's bound to be a he, by the way. He would have to share with his other shareholder, or he diverts it to another business that only he will benefit from. So in that situation, I mean, it's hard to prove, but at least a minority shareholder then has an opportunity of stepping into the shoes of the company itself and setting aside those transactions and making sure that the money comes back into the original company where it should have been in the first place. But as you say, the problem is that, all right, so the money then comes back in, but how do you get it out? Because by this stage, you're loggerheads with the majority shareholder. So it can be a limited right. And you, as you say, you don't tend to see it very often. There is another option available to you, which would be to position to wind up the company on just an equitable grounds, on the basis that basically you've been in business together, you can no longer be in business together, so just ask the court to wind up the company and deal with it that way. But again, that's not such a brilliant remedy because it's costly, and the whole idea is that all the assets of the company are piled up and sold, all the creditors are paid off, and then you go your separate ways. It's not an attractive option in everyday life, you know. And also, if you're going to be winding the company up, then that means that you've got to pay all the creditors off ahead of time, and they might get more of their share of the cash before you're able to distribute what's left. So it's not always an attractive option. But I think, Dex, you were going to add some things to that.
Yeah, I think what you say is absolutely right, Alex. And by definition, winding a company up is only going to be something a court's going to be willing to do if there is no realistic alternative. So that situation, I would say, is unlikely to arise very often because it's such a massive thing to do for all the reasons that you describe. I suspect that the kind of situation that might lead to an order being made by a court is where the company is simply at deadlock and there is no way around it. So the way the company is set up, there is no casting vote, or there's no way of making a binding decision. That might be one situation. Another one might be where there's been serious mismanagement, fraud being an obvious example. In that situation, then it's going to be very difficult for the company to continue, and it might be easier for a court to find that the easiest thing to do is just to wind the company up because it's not salvageable. But because of the onerous nature of what you're asking for, as you say, that really is the nuclear option. And it's not something to be taken lightly because you have to accept that a court might well be reluctant to go down that road. I think that from my perspective, for an unhappy shareholder, an unfair prejudice petition is going to be by far the most logical approach. But for all the reasons we've discussed, there has to be a very sensible approach taken very early on about whether that is going to work or not, and whether it's going to achieve what your client wants. Because in the heat of the moment and when principle takes over, you might well think to yourself, yes, I'm going to look after my own rights, I'm going to take this on. But then what you sometimes find is that you start the ball rolling, and then you find that your fellow directors and shareholders start fighting fire with fire. And before you know it, you're locked into a very tetchy, expensive legal battle. And suddenly your costs are rising and you've got no particular guarantee of success. And then really you're looking for a way out of it. So as will always be the case, or will almost certainly be the case in litigation, you should be looking at ways of settling the matter as amicably as possible on the best possible terms without finding yourself locked into an emotionally draining, financially draining legal battle.
I think that's a fair comment. With these situations, it's all about managing the client's expectations. So when they come in saying, I've fallen out with my business partner and, you know, either he or I need to leave, then yes, you can talk to them about an unfair prejudice petition as being an option for them, but it's very expensive litigation to do. And as you know, Dax, once you start litigation, you can't get out of it either without a court order or the consent of the other party. And the consent of the other party is going to be, well, pay me lots of money and my costs and I'll go away. So I always sit clients down at the start of these sort of conversations and say, right, okay, that's the route that's open to you, and it's a complicated and expensive route, and it will take forever. You will become grey overnight as a result of doing this sort of thing. And ultimately, the most you can really hope for is that your shares get bought for a fair value. So if that's going to be the end position, why don't we start off at that now? So we'll engage with the opposition on a without prejudice basis, so it can't be held against us in a later court action. And we'll try and explain to the opposition why they ought to deal with us on a fair value. Ultimately, that's what the court probably will order if it goes full term in a court case. So try and persuade them to be reasonable and to approach something like a fair value for the shares from the outset. And then both parties can avoid spending money on lawyers, and they can bring to an end much sooner the unpleasant relationship that has deteriorated and get on with the rest of their lives doing something different, but not having to be in business together. So it's trying to get the clients to recognize that right from the word go, and then to explain to the opposition that it is good business to do a deal now, which involves money changing hands, but then making a clean exit rather than getting engaged in bitter litigation. And meanwhile, business cannot continue. So nothing's getting done. And the staff can see that the owners are fighting it out, and it's not a good place to be. So from a good commercial stance, doing a deal is the best thing to do. But it's also, if it's going to be the end result as to what a court would order anyway, then you may as well face that right from the word go and get it dealt with accordingly. So would you have anything more to add about that at all?
No, I don't think so. I think that seems perfectly sensible. It's important that people don't get involved in false economies. But at the same time, these are emotive subjects. Principle can take over. But as I always say to clients, if you want principle to become the driving force, then best get your checkbook out. Although as it's 2022, perhaps not the checkbook, but get some BACS transfers going.
Thank you for joining us. If you found this interesting, then you need to look out for our next podcast on business acquisitions.
The opinions presented in this podcast are for general information only. Any reliance on the opinions given is made at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice. If you are experiencing a dispute, such as discussed in this episode, we recommend you seek legal advice. Please do feel free to contact us for further assistance.